Hi, Blue Wire listeners. I'm Greg Olson. I'm excited to partner with Blue Wire to bring you TE1, a podcast where I interview the tight ends who have revolutionized the position. Listen in as I have raw, in-depth conversations with the all-time greats like Shannon Sharp, Tony Gonzalez, Travis Kelce, and George Kittle. We'll explore how the tight end position has changed over the last 60 years and what it takes to be the very best. Subscribe to TE1 from Blue Wire Studios today so you're ready for the August premiere.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel and Matt Brooks. Fellas, how are we doing after a surprising Nets win?
There's too much has happened. Like, I'm like overstimulated with, I tried to do a recap tweet of everything that happened in the last 3 hours, and I think I forgot like 10 things. I'm good. I don't have any tattoos on me, so I'm going to take that as a W.
We'll get to that. I woke up at 5:46 a.m. Check the box scores, check what's going on, have a flick through Twitter, and I had to tweet out that the Nets were winning because it did not feel real. It felt like I was still sleeping. I had no idea what's going on. It is the biggest upset win since 1995, according to odds makers. Oh my God, TLC MVP. I can't wait to get into it and hear what happened, guys.
It was crazy. Obviously, the bubble has been nuts, but this is a game that I'm sure we won't forget. Before we get started, as always, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. And this episode is presented by DealDash.com. But let's jump into it, guys.
Matt, 40-34 in the first quarter. The Nets got off to a hot start.
It didn't make sense while I was watching it. I was like, what is going, like, it, I don't know. It just didn't compute in my head. They, like, just didn't miss threes. Like, they did not miss from three. TLC was a huge catalyst of that. That guy has had it stuck on automatic really since getting in the bubble. There were a couple plays where he would grab the ball and it, like, wasn't a great pass, and he would, like, take it from his like, ankles almost, and then just chuck it up and it went in. And I just, like, I'm very excited to go through. This is going to be a big film session that I didn't think I'd be having after this game. But I honestly don't even know how it happened. Like, I wish I could give you a better answer, but it doesn't make sense to me. Like, it's not computing.
Yeah, this game was just full of surprises right from the start. And then just like the Nets, you expect them to come out a little competitive. You know, a lot of guys fighting for their NBA life or just trying to earn minutes moving forward. But like, they came out crispy, you know, defensively. Matt tweeted this out. You know, they ran to the zone a little bit too. That helped them out. And then just like offensively, I guess Garrett Temple said after the game, they had talked to the Rockets and they said there'd be a ton of open threes. And that was really where they attacked. And you knew there would be open shots. It was just kind of a matter of, will the Nets hit those shots? And, you know, they started cooking early. And I was even more surprised with the Nets maintaining that lead because the Bucks shot like 50% from three in the first quarter as well. So like to drop 40 in general is just amazing, especially because think about the offense we saw against Orlando for certain stretches. It was terrible. Yeah. And this team came out and cooked. So like Matt said, it's hard to put into words because it was just so unexpected.
I mean, that's the perks of the bubble, because I saw that as well. It was just like, when are you ever going to be like, hey, James, Russ, how did you guys do it? It's not going to happen in any other situation, but in this Orlando campus bubble environment, it's goddamn insane. But the first half, obviously, you know, 73-65 to end it. The Nets were able to maintain and outscore the Bucks again in the second quarter. The second half, the Bucks put on the clamps a little bit, but the Nets were still able to hold on. Matt, tell me how I was lucky enough to see the last sort of 2 minutes, and Chioza had a pretty careless turnover, and then Garrett Temple just comes up in the clutch. How did this game progress? You know, obviously we didn't see a heap of minutes from the starters from the Bucks. You know, I don't know what Bud was doing necessarily. It's like he wanted to lose the game. Yeah. Tell me how this game progressed from that first quarter.
It was just one of those games where like certain guys got hot at different times. So like you had TLC get really hot from three, and then Justin Anderson hit a couple of threes. And then at the end, like, props to Garrett Temple, who was not having a good bubble showing, really, up till today. Hit a couple of shots, like, shots that I actually don't typically feel like he makes. Like, those shots off a couple dribbles, those pull-up shots that I just, like, I don't feel like they've gone in this year, went in. And he carried him home. Like, he deserves, I haven't seen much credit And I haven't even given him that much credit on Twitter, which doesn't always mean anything. Twitter can kind of be up and down. But he deserves a ton of credit. He carried him home, and they were dead in the water at certain points in that fourth quarter.
Yeah, it felt like the Nets were going to lose the game and they're going to lose the lead. But you mentioned it. Garrett Temple had a couple clutch threes, had a couple step backs. Yeah, obviously the biggest shot of the game. But it was just kind of like the Bucks sat Giannis, obviously. They sat Middleton in the second half and Bledsoe. And it was like maybe they didn't want to get like embarrassed or they didn't want to risk injuring one of their guys. And it felt like maybe, you know, the Bucks bench players or other role players were going to step up and be like, all right, we're not going to lose this game. Like, we have to go out there and be serious. And then it just was like the Nets were able to kind of keep competing. And like Matt said, different guys hit big shots and everyone kind of almost had their moments in this game. There was even points where Lance Thomas was hitting shots for the Nets. So it was just like everyone had like a little bit of contribution all over the place.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, if we're looking at those three-point shots, Garrett Temple, 5 of 11, TLC, 5 of 7. Chioza took 9 of them, only hit 2 of them. And then, like you guys were alluding to, Justin Anderson, 3 of 5. I guess we'll jump into the players, guys. That starting five, for those who weren't playing along at home, Lance Thomas, Rodion Skurins, Garrett Temple, TLC, and Tyler Johnson. That's a starting 5.
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that was they're 1-0, and obviously it was really interesting not having a real center out there, especially going against the Bucks. Brook Lopez didn't play today, but Robin Lopez is still a beast. We know how big Giannis is, and I felt like the zone defense really helped this starting lineup kind of stay together and just do their thing and just find their groove and get the ball moving. But I would say the bench players were probably just as good as the starters for certain points of the game.
Yeah, let me just say, like, the Brook Lopez thing is really big. Like, that, I thought that was pretty big, and it kind of, like, they were just able to, you know, all the threes that they hit, I think a lot of it was just off drive and kick. Mm-hmm. And Brook Lopez, even, like, the drive and kick aspect of games, like, I just felt like something about him not being there just gave the Nets a little more room to work with. And, of course, like, sitting those guys, you know, in Giannis and Middleton in the second half made a difference. But I actually thought this was a huge testament to, like, Lopez's Defensive Player of the Year candidacy. Like, I thought it was a really good case for him. Now, of course, like, the way to always beat the Bucks, and I thought that, I mean, you know, if I think the biggest winner of anybody from this is Vaughn.
Yeah.
Like, I thought this was huge for Jacques Vaughn. For him, A, to make the adjustment that I don't think he was too late to make the zone defense move, but I'm happy he made it early, and it clearly made a difference, and it forced the Bucks into taking a lot of threes. So you think of them, they're like, you know, they're a team that you think of, oh, it's Giannis and a bunch of shooters. They're actually not that good at shooting threes. They're really closer to league average. So if you're putting the ball in the hands of all these like auxiliary guys, you actually stand a better chance. Conversely, if you're taking threes and you're making them against the Bucks, they're so good at guarding the paint that's kind of the only way you can beat them. So, I again, like, credit to Vaughn. He did the right thing, and it kind of also worked out that, you know, LeVert not playing was actually weirdly, and I dare I say it, kind of a good thing for them because he's such a downhill pest. They had to play a different style, and it just so happened to be the exact right way to beat the Bucks.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a ton of off-ball movement and guys coming off screens, getting those threes and those driving kicks, like you mentioned. Definitely an impact that Brook Lopez wasn't there defensively and then even offensively because, like, the Bucks have been more willing to use him as a post player like we saw a lot in his Nets days. Yeah. So I think that definitely played a factor. And I agree with the whole Vaughn aspect of just, like, even Garrett Temple after the game said, you know, he's a player's coach. He knows how to motivate guys and kind of get things going. And he told them, like, going to the game, we're not playing to lose. We're playing to win this game. And he must have given them some type of confidence because they just came out with really good energy.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, those three-point stats, Brooklyn Nets, 21 of 57, nearly 37%. The Milwaukee Bucks, 17 of 51. So both teams were letting it fly, and the Nets just happened to be hitting it a little bit more. And I do like the point you made, Matt, because while the Bucks have a system that is almost similar to the Brooklyn Nets, while obviously having immensely more talent, the three-point shooting aspect is, you know, they don't, other than like Middleton, you know, for me, there's no really guy, and I guess to an extent, Ilyasova, there aren't really guys that sort of stand out in that regard. But
And just one more note on that too, Jack.
Yeah.
Post game, they mentioned that there were certain guys they were going to be more willing to let shoot threes. You know, like a DJ Wilson going 1-6 or a Frank Mason or guys like that. They'd be more willing to give those guys threes. They obviously didn't do a great job covering Kyle Korver, but he was still able to knock down three of them. But that's a more credit to Vaughn and the game plan and just having an idea where maybe he can get some type of advantage.
It's a good point. But Matt, let's get into TLC, the man whose film you're going to be diving into. I think that's going to take you quite a while, mate, because he had a career night. 26 points, 8 of 12 from the field, 5 of 7 from 3, hit all 5 3 throws, 3 rebounds, had a dime as well. Did foul out, but boy, oh boy, TLC is outside. He's the probably out of the role players and the guys that are like looking to earn themselves a spot on next year's Brooklyn Nets team and prove themselves. He's the best performer in the Orlando campus for the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, so what I've liked, and I the threes are like, you know, those are, I don't know. I feel like his three-point shot is really variable still. Like, as exciting as this is right now, we've also seen what it looks like when he's not making threes, and it's tough. Like, he will go 1 for 8, 1 for 7. I think that's kind of probably what he's going to trend to a little bit closer, as just be somebody that's a little bit streaky. But I think the thing that I really, really liked for him was he's showing a little bit of like a spot up game, where if you run him off the line, we've seen him go to the rim. That's what he was doing when playing under Kenny. But under Jacques Vaughn, he's done this little mid-range pull-up shot that I've saved a couple of those to my computer, and I'm going to be looking for those again, because I think it's just one of those things, like, if you can be as, you know, as multidimensional as possible, I think that really helps you if you're a role guy. So that's the thing I'm really watching for from him, is that he's got that part of his game down. And I don't know. I think that's the thing that really stood out to me today.
Yeah, he's just looking more confident and comfortable out there. And like on those driving kicks, and not realizing that, hey, I don't have to force a three. If this guy's closing out hard, I'll hit him with a pump fake. I might hit that mid-range shot. I might go for a reverse inside. He just looks like the game is making more sense to him, where now he understands what he's going to do to be in the NBA. And also, I just love his toughness. Like, he's a guy that's just willing to really battle with anybody. And I think you appreciate that, especially when the Nets are switching so much and they're so undersized. That sticks out as one of these wings who's not really a big, but he's willing to kind of battle down there and try to fight for position.
Yeah, as I mentioned on a previous pod, and I think Zach Lowe did it as well, if TLC is going to shoot his career percentage that he shot this year from 36% or so for the rest of his career, he's going to be an NBA player. And obviously he's not going to shoot 5 from 7 every night, but if he's not going to shoot 2 from 16 like he did over the scrimmage games, then obviously there is some sort of middle ground, like Matt alluded to. But you know,
zero turnovers too.
And I think, yeah, you can't knock him for what he's doing. We can only take him from what he's producing so far. And he's had two absolutely outstanding games, a 26-point performance and a 24-point performance. You know, I wouldn't have had money on TLC scoring 50 points in total across the 8 games, let alone, you know, and obviously I think he's got a couple against the Wizards as well. But let's get to the other guys in the starting lineup. We alluded to Garrett Temple, the Nets superstar, mind you. He was the guy in the promos. In the NBA TV promos, he had himself a night, 19 points, 7-15 from the field, 5-11 from three. We know he can get hot there. He's got good form, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 blocks. Matt, GT, the Prez, was stepping up.
Again, like, I just, that those shots that I don't know if I always loved from him, he was hitting. He had a big, I think it was like a 3 off the catch. I believe it was from a Chioza pass. That was nice. I mean, like, that really took them, and it was at a point where I thought the game was done. Like, I thought it slipped out of their hands, and he hits this three that it just kind of took the energy out of the gym. And you know, even without fans, you can still feel that stuff through the TV. So I was impressed by him, and I like, you know, it's so hard to say who deserves the game ball because I feel like the entire team does. But man, I would be very hard pressed to say that, like, he doesn't deserve a ton of credit there.
Yeah, he was really like that stabilizing force late in the game that was going to be like, all right, guys, relax. We're not going to lose this. I'm going to hit a shot. And it's not always typically shots he makes, because we've seen him have bad performances, like you guys mentioned, throughout pretty much the entire bubble. He hasn't shot well, but he picked the right game to step up, and the Nets really needed him. And he just did some of the other little things that he typically does throughout a game. The biggest difference today was he just hit those shots.
Yeah, obviously it's a make or miss league, as they say. And Garrett Temple is a guy who we've seen before hit go 0 of 11, but now he's gone 5-11. It's a marked discrepancy between the two. But
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball is finally kicking off this week, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds and prop bets to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and Robert Horry. See what they had to say what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. Have you ever heard of DealDash.com? It's the best, most honest bidding site where you can win things you'd never expect at a price you'd never believe. They have over 1,000 auctions every day on electronics, appliances, beauty products, home decor, and even cars. Here's how it works. It's like an auction, but every item starts at $0 and only goes up 1 cent every time you bid. The kicker is the auction clock restarts after just 10 seconds. That means every time you bid, everyone else has 10 seconds to answer or the item is yours. If you go ahead and buy now, DealDash is offering our listeners an extra 100 free bids upon sign up on top of their other discounts. Go to DealDash.com and use offer code BACKBOARD or DealDash.fm/BACKBOARD. That's DealDash.fm/BACKBOARD.
Guys, we got to get to the Chiefs. We got to get to Chai Chai, Chris Chioza. Absolutely outstanding game from him. Probably his best game as a Brooklyn Net. Led the team in minutes with TLC as well. 31 minutes. Had a double-double, 10 points, 10 assists. Only 3 turnovers. Had a few boards. Wasn't necessarily hitting his shots amazingly. 4 of 13 from the field. Did hit a couple of threes. Matt, I'm probably going to do a breakdown of this guy. Are there going to be some cool passes to see, I'm guessing?
I thought, even in, when he wasn't playing well, I have to say, like, he just, his energy and like the, what he adds to games is so, I don't know. It just, it really changed. Like, he just does good things. I tried to like put that into words earlier. Yeah. And I just don't even know how to explain it. Like, he's undersized
plus
on
17.
Defense.
Plus 17.
Yeah, like,
I guess that probably alludes to that.
Right. And, like, he's just one of those old school point guards where it's like, he's a guy that keeps everybody involved. And I think for the Nets, like, this young team where, like, everybody feels like they need to be a part of this potential, I mean, I guess, playoff team, which feels weird to say, that's huge. Like, he's just making everybody feel important and feel involved. So.
It's like when you're playing a video game and your energy bar is low and then you bring in Chioza and it's just like an instant boost. Like, he just kind of gets things moving offensively. And like Matt said, it's a pass to everybody in the team, making them feel more involved, bringing up the energy. Obviously, it's a lot better when he's knocking down the shots, but he was still able to provide enough today in terms of his passing. And I feel like he's starting to get a better understanding of where he can attack. And there's moments where he can get to the rim and where he can finish and what type of moves he has to do to be a successful NBA player. There's still a lot of room for growth, but the passing and the playmaking is something that instantly sticks out anytime you watch him play.
Yeah, I mean, in a previous pod, I think we were asked a question about, like, who of these guys is an NBA rotation player for a Brooklyn Nets championship team. And obviously, there's still a ways to go for guys like TLC and Chris Chioza, but they're having moments and they're putting things together. Matt, I put to you before we get back to more game stuff, would you rather get a tattoo of Chris Chioza or Jared Allen?
I feel like you could do something cool with the cheese thing.
Although I guess a
fro would be pretty cool, but I mean, sure. I think I would.
Someone might mistake it for Dr. J too. So.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what that would look like too. Like, depends on where you'd get it. Would it be like, are you like? I don't get it. Like, I don't know what we're doing here. But the cheese thing is pretty straightforward. So maybe, yeah, maybe the cheese would be the easier way to go.
Nick.
Yeah, I'll probably go Jared Allen here. I think I'll just go with the fro, and then if someone's like, "Oh, you got a tattoo?" I'll be like, "Yeah, it's Dr. J," and then no one can really say anything about that.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm going off the board, going Joe Harris, as we all expected from that. Maybe I already do, guys. Maybe no one knows. I've never been spotted without my clothes on Twitter. Let's put it that way. We'll get back to the game. The rest of the starters, Matt, who stuck out for you? Lance Thomas, Rodions Kurowicz, Tyler Johnson. Obviously, none of those guys really lit it up, but they were making impacts here and there. I know we chatted a little bit off wax before we started recording about Lance Thomas sort of, you know, making big moments and making big plays. Who out of the rest of the three starters stuck out for you?
I mean, for the wrong reason, I think Rodions Kurowicz has been not great the last couple. Like, I really, since the games actually started, which has been disappointing, the three-point shot just was, like, not there today. And
slight
I don't,
hesitation still.
Yeah, and I just don't love the, like, 28-footers from him. Like, I don't know. Those always seem to be short. like every single time. So I don't know. That aspect I wasn't super impressed with. Everybody else was solid. I like Tyler Johnson. People were like a little bit low on him after today's game, and I've become a fan of him pretty quickly because he gets around screens well and he attacks the rim and he rebounds pretty well for his size. So I thought he was pretty good today. I mean, again, like he just like everybody else on this Nets team today was just solid and did certain things really well.
Yeah, Tyler Johnson had a clutch board. I think I remember seeing Nick, if I'm not mistaken, in the closing moments of the game.
Yeah, he had a nice little putback. I think one thing I like from Tyler Johnson, occasionally he'll hit like a smaller guard with a drive and get to the rim. You know, he doesn't always finish that, but it's at least something. Got to the free throw line, and like Matt mentioned, he's willing to compete defensively. Not like an elite guy or anything, but you can see at least some of the effort you're getting from him.
Yep.
Lance Thomas, obviously, he's still super slow. He's not going to magically get faster. Did hit a couple buckets. It felt like it was going to be a Lance Thomas show to start this game. I think he had like 5 shots in the first quarter. And then, like Matt mentioned with Rodions, there's just so much inconsistency, and it's like that feel and that comfort we saw in the scrimmage games we're not necessarily getting in the seeding games. I will say one positive I liked from him is like he's definitely becoming more of a screener and more of a willing screener. It's like he's setting screens on almost every possession, where in the past it just felt like he would sit in the corner. Obviously some of that's due to role change, but if he can just kind of continue to work on every element of his game, he'll eventually become a good player.
Okay, interesting, interesting. Good to see that there's moments from some of those guys. Yeah, I was astounded at that that put back from Tyler Johnson. Absolutely awesome play from him. Matt, is Dante Hall the Giannis stopper?
I'm feeling him out. I thought he gives good energy. I just need to see if he can rebound and protect the rim. He's a guy that likes to block a lot of shots. I don't think he fouls too much, but again, like such a limited sample, like I really can't say. I just want to see the rebounding a little bit. That's it. But I know what he is on offense. He's going to be a rim runner, kind of your classic Brooklyn Nets center. But I do like that he had a little feistiness to him today. That was refreshing to see.
Especially against Giannis. Like, that's a guy that, like, nobody in the NBA really wants to mess with. Dante Hall was I'm good. I'll mess with him. I don't really care. You're not going to shove me under the paint. And I think I definitely could see the baiting of block shots a little bit in his game, which isn't always a terrible thing. It just depends on how far you're willing to go. Is it like a Hassan Whiteside level, or is it more of somebody who's just, you know, trying to bait them and actually make a good defensive play? And then rebounding, I think he'll be a good rebounder. I don't know if his skills are polished yet, but he just has that energy and effort of a good rebounder, like somebody you would see from like back in the day of Reggie Evans, who just are always willing to fight on the boards and just like jumping excessively.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 9 boards in 21 minutes, including 3 offensive ones. You know, he's bouncy, he's springy, he's got that energy. You know, 1 steal and 2 blocks. You know, I'm a fan of this guy. And, you know, if Giannis wants to F him up, he's going to have to go through me as well. It ain't happening, mate. It ain't happening, Greek Freak. I don't care about those muscles. Dante Hall's got my back. I've got his back. Let's get to some of the other reserves, Matt. Let's get to the bad news. Jamal Crawford, only 6 minutes, was able to make an impact in the time that he was out there, but unfortunately injured his hamstring.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like he was a really early spark plug for them, which sucks. Like, it was like, that was when the game really, I feel like he just got, his playmaking was great. I mean, he was really involving his guys. So it sucked. Like, I think he might have been a really early catalyst for the performance we saw today. He's 40, so I can see why they were tentative about the conditioning thing, but he looked good. I mean, he's totally fun to watch. He's always been that guy. So I really hope that we get to see him again.
Yeah, it's like the game was already fun with the Nets competing, and all of a sudden Jamal Crawford comes in and is just like playmaking, dropping assists, hit that 3, and then it just like sucked because it looked like he pulled his hamstring because it wasn't really much contact or anything like that, and then you saw him kind of pulling at it, and like the Nets did play it as safe as pretty much possible they could with him, so we'll just kind of see what happens. But he could have definitely been a guy, maybe he still will be, that could definitely have an impact on that second unit and giving you just a spark in playmaking and scoring ability, and like NBA players are going to respect him because he's been doing it for like 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. You know, obviously, in the 6 minutes that he was out there, 3 assists and 5 points, hit a 3 as well. It's just disappointing because we wanted better for the Jamal Crawford experience in Brooklyn, and hopefully it's not too serious of a hamstring, but I guess we know why the Nets were holding him back, like Matt was alluding to so much, you know, the conditioning. And I mentioned in the outlet and JBT and the buzz and just all pods that, you know, muscle strains and are going to be a big thing. You know, we're seeing a lot of groin stuff and that sort of thing. it's disappointing. It's disappointing, I guess, to say the least. But Matt, who else stuck out to you out of the reserves? You know, we got some Justin Anderson posterized in Giannis. We got some Moussa time. We got a bit of Jeremiah Martin throwing his defensive action out there.
Yeah, Jeremiah Martin was just a notable thing because I've been clamoring for the defensive guard that can, like, play a little bit, you know, create for himself a little bit, but mostly just cover up for guys' mistakes. And some of the names I've thrown out there, like a Chris Dunn, whatever, Michael Carter-Williams. If he can stay on the floor and he's, you know, somebody that really is a legitimately great defender, because he reminds me a lot of Pat Beverly. I mean, that guy is just, like, in your jersey. If they can go the in-house route and just, you know, sign him to a non-guaranteed deal or something like that versus try to, you know, peruse the veteran market, I don't know, man. Like, I thought he was, like, maybe of anybody that I saw today, I was like, boy, like, this might be the guy who fills the biggest need outside of, like, TLC in terms of, like, we need role guys, and this guy could do it. I also think Dante Hall could be there, too, as well. A little bit of a low-cost version or of something like that, a third big. So, I don't know. Like, today was one of those days where everybody looked like a rotational piece next year, which I did not expect to see. Chioza, too. I mean, so he was a big option. Like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but, you know, in a year when they lose Dinwiddie and Kyrie Irving for the restart, point guard is still somehow their deepest position.
It's kind of funny. I mean, they also have, like, zero forwards, what it feels like. But I agree. Yeah. Jeremiah Martin was a guy, like, I had the same thought as Matt. I just felt like I was a little bit crazy tweeting it out because it's just, like, the defense instantly pops. And then it's, like, if he develops a three-point shot, like Matt said, you know, this is a guy that can easily fill that role player role because he's just, like, willing to get in your face. He had a beautiful strip on Chris Middleton. He had that, you know, clutch defensive play at the end of the game, getting his hands on the ball. He just is, like, full of, like, pure energy defensively, and the Nets desperately need that. And even Chioza was saying post-game, like, hey, this is – when he makes those types of defensive plays, it kind of makes us all want to play better defense. So I'm all for Jeremiah Martin, and I agree. Maybe he's not ready next season. Maybe it's a thing where he's like the 15th man on the roster and you're trying to develop his skill set. But you can see the potential there if he's able to at least make himself a capable three-point shooter. He doesn't have to be elite, but just someone where you have to respect him in the corner.
Yeah, I mean, if the project guys on the roster are guys like Jeremiah Martin, Nicholas Claxton, those guys are later developing the G League with some spot minutes and garbage time minutes in the NBA next season, I'm not going to hate it because at the end of the day, you need to fill out the roster. You might have a 15-man roster like the Lakers where it's full of vets or whatever, but you know, it doesn't hurt to have young guys on the up and up because who knows what could happen going forward. But I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about, I mean, we talked a little bit about Jana Musa, but if we had Nolan Jensen on this episode, we'd be spending half an hour talking about Justin Anderson. He's probably got another 3,000 words, you know, in the wing somewhere. Matt, tell me about him. Obviously, 11 points, 4 of 7 from the field, 3 of 5 from 3, 4 boards, had a block, had a dime. Nice game from Mr. Anderson.
Yeah, I mean, the dunk was huge on Giannis. Like, that was, like, I legitimately stood up and, like, yelled at my TV. I could not believe it.
I was so confused.
It came out of nowhere, and it just didn't compete. I had to, like, go back. I was, like, waiting for the highlight. I was going to tweet something, and then I was just like, there's no way that was on Giannis. Like, I need to see them play that again. And I was like, oh, wow, he got Giannis. Like, he just got Giannis on that one. Otherwise, I have to say, like, his three-point shooting, it's not even that he's making them. It's that he just looks confident taking them.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, man, this guy really believes in the stroke. Like, he's taking these things from way the hell out there in a way that, you know, his self in Philly or Dallas, like, wouldn't have even thought about doing. So, I don't know. I mean, this Long Island Nets team is doing something right because all these guys, like, kind of know what they're good at and they just lean into it. I don't know. I just, again, very impressed. It's weird how this Nets roster coming into Orlando, you know, it's not a necessarily talented roster, but it's a bunch of guys that know exactly what they're good at and what they're supposed to do, which is something you don't think of when you think of G Leaguers. And it weirdly fits together, like, kind of perfectly. Like, you have a great passer in Chioza. Jeremiah Martin's your defensive guard. You know, Justin Anderson's your 3-and-D guy. TLC, who played for their G League team, is, like, the versatile defender who also can hit threes. Like, it's very interesting that they've just got like a roster that fits decently well.
Yeah, I think a lot of these guys understand that, like, hey, this is going to be my role if I can make it to the NBA. This is what I have to do well to earn that spot. And I think for Justin Anderson, there's never really been a question about, like, his tenacity defensively. Like, he's such a physical presence. He had no issue trying to battle with Giannis. It was like, can he knock down his three-point shot? And, you know, his three-point shot looked good, and he's looking confident, like Matt said. There was one shot I think he hit in the corner where I was like, oh, that closeout's coming in pretty hot. He's probably not going to pull up. Pulled up, nailed it. I was just like, okay, this is a really good opportunity for him.
Yeah, and you take it. You know, obviously, yeah, it's not necessarily going to be totally consistent across multiple game spans, but if it's going to come against the best team in the NBA, goddamn, why not? And we're going to verse these guys, no doubt, probably more likely, definitely in a playoff series. So it's fun. Obviously, it's going to be a completely different scenario, but we'll take this as it is. Nick and Matt, I want to get to some more game notes. And Matt, the Nets were able to force 19 turnovers and score 27 points and only had 7 themselves. What is going on? The Nets are terrible at forcing turnovers and are generally terrible at taking care of the ball at the same time.
Yeah, I don't know how they controlled the ball. That made no sense to me. I mean, part of it might be just the Chiosa thing. Like, he's just so good. Like, yeah. I mean, he had a bad turnover at the very end, but like he really controls the ball well for the most part. A little risk taker, but, you know, you need that in life. In terms of forcing the turnovers, I hate to keep coming back to this zone defense. I feel like ever since you guys brought me on, all I've talked about is zone defense or whatever. However,
is this really Kenny Atkinson on the other side?
Yeah, apparently I'm just the Kenny whisperer over here. But no, I thought the zone defense was nice. As I said, it simplified the roles and kind of what I was hoping it would do happened. And because they're a little bit smaller, they can shift around a little bit easier. So if you have a guy on the block or you have a guy that's like trying to go down the lane, it's a little bit easier for guys to stunt and recover. So they're going to come in and try to like dislodge the ball when you're at like the free throw line area and then be able to try to sneak out to their three-point shooter that they're guarding. That's kind of the advantages of this, is that you have a bunch of guys that move around well. And as we've seen with the Nets, and funny enough with the Rockets, yes, playing smaller gives up things like rebounds and all these other things and shot blocking to a degree, but you're going to get a lot of deflections and force a lot of turnovers because you guys have guys that are so versatile and are just smaller. They can sneak in there. It's very interesting.
And I felt like just some of the effort and the tenacity defensively, like getting in the Bucks' face where maybe they didn't anticipate it, where they were able to kind of force some turnovers. And then, like you mentioned, Matt, kind of using that quickness to your advantage and getting to spots ahead of them. I think they probably forced like 3 or 4 offensive fouls in this game, which is always a nice boost defensively.
I mean, I'll take it. This is a one-game sample size, obviously. But, you know, as we alluded to, Jacques Vaughn with the sort of coaching adjustment and Garrett Temple being the Rockets whisperer. I'm taking all these things, guys. And Bradley Beal did also mention that Garrett Temple, best teammates ever played with. So just another little tidbit wanted to give on GT the Prez. Final little game.
I just want to say one thing about the 7 turnovers. Like,
yeah.
It is like remarkable. Like, this is a group that probably doesn't even have a ton of practice minutes together in terms of the lineups we saw today, and to only commit 7 turnovers against a good defense. Obviously, I'm not going to say the Bucks were super locked in today. They kind of felt like they had a little bit of like a half-ass effort, but still, 7 turnovers. Like, we don't see that from the normal Nets ever. So it's just like a lot of props to these guys and playing under control and knowing what they need to do. And I think some credit goes to Vaughn for kind of being that steadying force as the leader.
And I mean, this is the best defensive team this season and one of the best defensive teams in many, many years and in a lot of ways. So while, yes, it's like, okay, Brook Lopez, certainly his absence had an effect. But, you know, it's like we also didn't have Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, and Joe Harris. So,
oh, and this guy, Kyrie and KD.
Those guys aren't bad too. Nicholas Claxton and Wilson Chandler. Let's throw them all out there. Why not? But the final game that I wanted to touch on, guys, was 30 assists on 43 made field goals. We've touched on Chris Chiosa and just that sort of control and ball movement style that he brings to the Nets play, but he only had 10 of them and we had 30 of them. So Matt, was that ball fizzing? Was it just made shots? How did that 30 assists come to fruition?
I'm looking at numbers, honestly. I'm cheating a little bit because my evaluation of Dante Hall was so off now that I'm just, I don't know.
We still got time.
I know. Let's see. Dude, I mean, I hate to like be like it was all Chiosa, but like even on the plays where, yes, somebody else got the assist, like he just, like, it's a catalyst thing. It's like when you play, so say you play, like, you look at what's going on in Dallas, and you look at how Kristaps Porzingis is playing. Like, he's moving the ball way better than he ever has after spending a couple of months with Luka Doncic. You look at certain guys, like Jamal Murray has gotten a way better passer since playing with Jokic. Like, when you play with somebody that moves the ball instinctively and is always finding you on your spots, that's contagious. Like, you're moving that ball around. I can't emphasize how important I think he is. I've been super high on it for this Nets team that honestly could really use a playmaker. Like, there are other teams. Like, take, like, the Clippers out west. There's just something off with them. And I think that, A, part of it is that they don't have a rim protector, per se, although I like Zubac a lot. But, B, they don't have a guy that really moves the ball. Like, their best playmaker is probably Kawhi, I guess. So,
yeah.
When you're looking at the Nets next year, yes, Kyrie Irving is a better playmaker than people give credit for, but it's still not his number one instinctual thing to do. And I think that when you have somebody like Chris Chioza, who is going to be keeping, especially your second unit guys, who you're really going to need in certain nights, especially if you're trying to manage Kyrie and KD's minutes accordingly, I don't know. I hate to give him so much credit for a team win, but that aspect of it I really think came from him.
Yeah, I think passing is always contagious, and I think, you know, Chioza helped set the tone. I'll give some credit to Vaughn, too, because it felt like he just had that mentality kind of in these guys, and it was everyone. They just realized, I think it was part of the game plan and talking maybe to the Rockets, where, like, hey, this is a team that you have to make the extra pass against because it'll lead to getting an open three. They might be able to close out on your first drive and kick, but the next one's going to be open. If that one's not open, then the next one is, because they're going to constantly be rotating, and you're going to kind of be able to find that weakness. And I thought Chioza was contagious, but also I thought there was good passing even from a guy like Musu, had a couple good passes in this game. Jamal Crawford, just like a lot of guys were able to understand, you know, how to play and how to beat this team. And obviously, you know, your point guard is going to have a big impact on it, but it just felt like it was a real team vibe.
Yeah, I've always been a big proponent for the ball moves faster than the players do. So you get that thing moving. And I, ever since, sort of probably falling in love with the game. And Greg Popovich and the San Antonio Spurs, future Brooklyn Nets coach, Greg Popovich. But Matt, was there anything else that stood out in this performance?
No, I just like I'm box score deep diving over here. I just like some of these numbers. That Chris Chioza one is a crazy line to see off the bench in 31 minutes, just plus 17. That's nuts. I like you said that out loud, and I just couldn't even believe it the first time I had to double check. I mean, yeah, I just like overall, I think we've touched on everybody that I really had wanted to. I actually let me shout out Musa again. I thought that was Musa's like. Arguably, yeah, maybe not his best game, but it was in the top four. Like, he looked controlled and poised. I know he didn't shoot it great, but seeing him drive and kick it in the way and find his guys, like, that was the first time in a long, long, long time that I looked at Zanon Musa and I said, you know, there actually might be maybe possibly something here way, 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 way down the line. It's going to take a couple of years. He's got to figure out his shot selection, obviously. But that was the first time where I was like, okay, I can see what you could be. So I want to give him credit because we haven't talked about him a ton except in passing just now. I think he deserves a little bit of credit just for giving good minutes there, plus five on the game. So props to him. I love to see guys like that push through some tough moments that he's had this year and play to his best ability.
Yeah, he looked at points like a controlled NBA role player. Like, he understood what he needed to do out there and where he can kind of find his advantages. Yep. There was even a couple times where I actually kind of wanted Musa to try to take Korver on ISOs, but he elected to pass the ball instead. So props to him and kind of getting a better feel. Like you said, Matt, I think there is probably an NBA player under there, but it's like, will he get to that level where he can kind of continue to understand who he can be in the NBA? Because I think a lot of people go with the mindset, I'm going to be this star or I'm going to be this scorer, and it doesn't always work out that way, where you have to really adapt your game to fit the role that's needed for you.
It's a good point. All these guys that are in the NBA right now, at some point or another, have been the best on their high school team, the best in their college team or whatever, and to adjust. And we've seen some great pieces from different writers talking about that. Final one I wanted to get to, guys. I've been apparently forbidden from watching the games because it seems to me every time I don't watch games, the Nets win. So am I allowed to watch the Nets game, Nets going forward, or am I just going to have to turn the TV off and just keep doing these recaps with you lads?
I'll tell you after the first quarter tomorrow.
Yeah, good. Tomorrow's game's pretty fun. So I don't know. I don't want to say the Nets are going to win, but the Celtics are coming off a back-to-back. I don't know if these back-to-backs matter. That's what I'm curious about.
No so, travel.
Two things are going to play into that. Will Jack watch tomorrow, and will the back-to-backs matter? I think that's the two things we got to keep an eye on.
Absolutely. And, I mean, 7-1 is still in play, guys. I said it. And still get it. Where there's a will, there's a way. Let's put it that way. Nick, make sure you let me know in the DMs if I can chuck the TV on.
I will do. And I'll just say this. I'm intrigued to see tomorrow if Caris LeVert, Joe Harris, and Jared Allen pick up their effort and their tenacity. I mean, Joe and I think Jared have played solid defense, but Caris has been pretty bad defensively, and a lot of it is due to effort. But after watching this group play, and if they're all playing well defensively, he's going to stick out even more. So I'll be intrigued to see if he can step up on that side of the floor.
This team is just to end it, guys. This team is just fun, and I love that we are NBA Twitter's darling, and it's fun to be a part of. It's fun to recap these performances, win or loss. Awesome having Matt on board, fitting in seamlessly. He's the TLC. He's the third star that we've needed all along.
I know that joke is suddenly like not as ridiculous now that I made.
No.
So maybe like one episode in.
He's almost averaging 20 in the seeding games, right? He had 24, 26, and like 8. So it's interesting stuff. But as always, guys, a pleasure. Big thanks to everybody for listening. Like I mentioned before, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods.